Morning, everyone. Good morning, honorable members.
Good morning, Chair.
Again, thank you very much. I just wanted to check if there's audibility here. We welcome everybody, the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation. We also welcome our administration of the Portfolio Committee and welcome the collective of both the political leadership and administration coming from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. We are going to deal with basically two items today. It will be a matter relating to the situation in Tunisia, matters that relate to the constitution there, and then it will be the Ukrainian Russian briefing by the department. After each one of them, we'll have a discussion. We'll then have the minutes and close the meeting. The normal items, thank you, opening and welcome, apologies are also there. Do we have a move of adoption of the agenda?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, who's moving?
It's not like Chair.
Thank you very much.
I move to adopt the agenda, Chair, but equally, there is someone in attendance in this meeting whose gadget is only iPad. I think we take keen interest on who is in attendance in this meeting, even from the public. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Nwala. I'm sure that will be attended in the meantime whilst we deal with the adoption. I take it that we adopt the agenda as suggested by Honorable Nwala. And do we have apologies, Lubabalo?
Good morning,
I second that we adopt the agenda.
We have three apologies, Chair. One is from the minister.
Wait. Okay. It was a slight mistake on my side. The second is Honorable
Matezu.
Honorable Desmond Moela Matezu, the Deputy President of the African National Congress Youth League. Thank you very much for that. You are welcome, Honorable Chetty. Yes, apology. Lubabalo, proceed. You were starting with the minister who is in Geneva. Okay, honorable members, it looks like Lubabalo has got a challenge.
Thank you, Chair.
The first apology. Yes.
Thank you, Chair Bassi.
Proceed. Okay, honorable members, it looks like Lubabalo has got some challenges. We have an apology of Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Minister Pando, who is in Geneva. We also have an apology of the Deputy Ministers, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister Boetes, and Honorable Minister Mashego Dlamini. Deputy Minister Mashego Dlamini is in cabinet today because the minister is not there. Therefore, she has been requested to make a presentation on something to the executive.
Recording in progress.
Let me see this hand. Madam Pal.
Yes, Chair. I also want to apologize for joining later. I had some network challenges. But I will also be on a transit, on a family responsibility, but I'm part of the meeting.
Okay. Okay, no problem. Outstanding.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will be leaving the meeting around 1 o'clock for another meeting. Thank you.
If we go beyond one. Thanks, Austendi. Luavela, are you back? Yes, honorable members, we've got an apology also. We've got an apology also from the department regarding the acting DG of the department. As you know, there is a bereavement at home. That is why today we will have Mr. Monyela Clayson, who will be doing the briefing on both Tunisia, Ukraine, and the Russian situation. Muruti Miswe.
Agarra. Nekuparlintugule ka pastor von dad.
Muruti Rilebosile, komena khane tata, ralebo. Itumpo we bonsiteng komite ya rona, ralebo ka Muruti. Honorable Chetty.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Chair, can I be excused at 12:30? I have another appointment as well. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, there's no problem. Are you back, Luba? Okay, let's proceed to honorable member.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm back. Hello, Chairperson.
Yes, you can proceed.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I think you have covered most of the apologies, Chair, except that DDG Zomo, who was going to be covering the presentation, has requested to be represented by Ms. Phumzile Mazibuko, Chairperson, who's also in the platform.
Okay. You are welcome, Mema Mazibuko. We are also welcoming South Africans who may be joining us on different platforms provided by the Republic of South Africa's Parliament as part of participatory democracy. So you are welcome, those who are on the line. Now, Lubabalo, can you check if everybody else who is here? There was a mention about a gadget which is only reflected as iPad. Is everybody who is on the being welcomed by you and allowed by yourself to be here?
Chairperson, I'm going to remove the iPad chair until he or she identifies herself, Chair.
Oh, okay. There is no problem. Or whoever that person is, may contact you so that if they're experiencing problems with their other identifiable gadgets, then they can bring that to your attention. So that we can not be said to be excluding other people from either observing or participating in the meeting. Honorable members, we are now going into our third item, which is a matter relating to Tunisia. We all know that there's an escalation of some situation in Tunisia. It has been there for some time. And Tunisia remains one of our oversight areas. And we are doing that because we are pursuing our foreign policy relations, both in the region and in the world. Because good governance is what is one of the strategic objectives we look at as the portfolio committee representing Parliament and also the people of South Africa. As we are all aware, honorable members, Tunisia and South Africa have got bilateral relations which have been signed a long time ago. And this mechanism or agreement was last convened, I think, around 2008, which means that we have 14 years of this engagement formally not taking place. We ask the department to make sure that please let's revive those engagements with Tunisia, because there were reasons why those agreements were entered into. Unless a cogent reason is given to the portfolio committee on why such engagements have not been taking place, or they have been discontinued, or they are suspended. And we hope that in the course of the presentation, that at least you will also allude something to that particular matter. So revive the forum and make sure that it works for both the South African people and the people of Tunisia and Africa at large. But we are, however, happy that during the chair now of the United Nations, Tunisia was consistent, particularly in the Security Council. It was a reliable partner who South Africa could depend upon in as far as matters and dynamics, and being consistent on issues of principle is concerned, matters that have been unfolding there. So we hope that members will benefit a lot from getting this presentation about the update on the Tunisian situation. I see two hands here, Honorable Chait, Honorable Berkman. Over to you, Honorable Chait.
Okay, sorry if I may. I'll speak first. My camera is, I hope you can hear me. Chair, we're in the middle of a crisis at the moment which threatens World War III. And today, of course, is the possibility of the UN General Assembly vote. That we're going to discuss that as well.
Honorable Darkman. Honorable Darkman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you there? Why do we adopt the agenda? Honorable Darkman, I see you are looking at the ceiling or the skies now.
Chair, I might have missed the discussion of the agenda. Sorry.
Yes. You were saying the world is doing what? Okay. Honorable Darkman seems to have not been part of the meeting when we adopted the agenda. It does look like he wants to talk about Ukraine and the Russian situation. That matter is in the agenda, Honorable Darkman. Honorable Chetty? Okay, it looks like this was an earlier hand. Over to in that place in Munyela regarding Tunisia.
Because they are ruled more on the technical side, but the business side of it is our.
Mr. Hendricks, can you mute Mr. Hendricks? And then there's also somebody who has not muted there. Can you mute ADG? Non-SEPA.
I'm struggling to lift my hand, Chair. Sorry for that. I wanted to tell the Chair that I have connected, even though I had a bereavement. I have connected for the meeting.
Okay, my sister.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm now handing over to you then to hand over formally to Ntate Munyela to introduce him so that he can address us on Tunisia. How's Lucy?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the members of the Portfolio Committee. We are also joined by our senior managers from the department. We also apologize, Chair, that we don't have a PowerPoint presentation on Ukraine, because we were never informed that we will present on it. But however, we are seized with this matter and we are ready to present. We just apologize that we did not send documents in that effect, but we will be able to present on Ukraine. But thank you very much, Chair, for giving us this opportunity as a department to brief the committee and discuss the current situation in Tunisia, including what is happening in Ukraine. Chair, South Africa enjoys friendly relations with Tunisia and guided by our joint bilateral commission that was launched in 1996. We have cooperation in the fields of health, social development, science and technology, culture and sport. And these over years, these relations have strengthened. And you are correct, Honorable Chair, that these relations that we have with Tunisia dates back years. And these bilateral relations on cooperation in the sphere of trade, information and communications are presently receiving particular attention between our countries. But Chair, in addition to the exchange of visits from both countries, the signing of cooperation agreements in several fields have given further impetus to other areas of cooperation. DICO is preparing to revitalize the structured bilateral mechanism. And we agree, Honorable Chair, that we need to further strengthen this cooperation. And Honorable Chair, we are also pleased that Tunisia has over the years provided doctors who have been working and contributing to our healthcare system in rural areas throughout the country. Chair, Tunisia is an important partner with which we seek a stronger relationship through deeper economic engagement. In particular, Honorable Chair, we wish to increase trade and investment cooperation, and South Africa and Tunisia need to capitalize on the wealth of untapped opportunities in sectors such as banking, information technology, and tourism and arts and culture. And you would agree, Chair, that Tunisia is very strong in tourism. As a government, Honorable Chair, we are committed to promoting our national priorities through our national development plan. And their efforts to overcome the triple challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Chair, I look forward to our discussions today. And with us, Chair, if you allow, we have the Chief Director who's responsible for North Africa, Chief Director Nasruddin, who has recently come back from Brazil, but has been seized with North Africa and all the department's work since all before he went to Brazil. With your permission, Honorable Chair, I would like to request Chief Director Fadi Nasruddin, he's the Chief Director North and Central Africa, to give the presentation that has been prepared for the committee. After that, with your permission, Honorable Chair, we will request Phumzile Mazibuko, who's responsible, the Chief Director responsible for Russia, Ukraine, and all other related countries. With your permission, Honorable Chair, may I now invite Fadi.
Okay, thank you very much, Ambassador. And before we hand over to Nasruddin, on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, we would want to extend our condolences to you, the family, and everybody else who is bereaved and affected by the situation at home. We wish and pray that God must give you strength, yourself and the family. We know it's a very difficult period. And we are also thankful of you having come in here despite the bereavement that you have at home. God bless. Nasro?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Acting DG, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and colleagues from DIRCO and our guests. It's a great pleasure for me, Honorable Chairperson, to be back to present to the Portfolio Committee since our presentation last week. Honorable Chairperson, when we did the presentation last week, there was a request that we perhaps look at providing some more background in terms of history, because we recognize the importance of history in analyzing and understanding current dynamics. And so we have submitted just a short overview with the documentation in response to the request that came from the Portfolio Committee. So we will, again, as we always do, just briefly touch on some of the key elements of the historical background. But there is an additional paper that was short overview that was submitted was the paperwork that we did for the Portfolio Committee. Honorable Chairperson, the second request that emanated from our presentation last week was that we have invited our embassy also to participate in this virtual platform. So I would like to also recognize our ambassador, His Excellency Masango, and the first secretary in our embassy in Tunisia, who was also part of this meeting, Chairperson. If I may then, Chairperson, proceed straight into the presentation. If I can ask the secretary to move to the page that shows the maps. Now, I've included the maps, Chairperson, because if we're going to recognize the importance that history plays in the history of a country like Tunisia, or for that matter, even South Africa, then geography is also a critical element of that. Now, on the left-hand side of the screen, I've put the whole map of Africa to show that on the northern tip of Africa, that small green piece of land between Libya and Algeria is Tunisia. So we can see that it's in terms of Africa's continental geography, a relatively small country. In fact, South Africa is about seven times the land mass of Tunisia. It's a country also with a small population of about 12 million people. But its location, and this is where I get into the history part, its strategic location is what was really important. And so we have in the background, the historical background, the fact that the so-called burghers were the original African settlers who were in that region. They spread across what is today Morocco and Libya as well. Of course, they themselves don't recognize or appreciate the term Berber. They prefer to be called the Amazighan. And that's because the word Berber was in fact used by the European invaders to distinguish between their fellow Europeans and the barbarians, which is the root word that the word Berber is derived from. And so the Amazighan people were the original inhabitants there. But because of strategic location, this is a country that has for literally hundreds and hundreds of years gone through waves of occupation. So we see, for instance, that the Romans were there for something like 800 years. The Ottomans were there, the Phoenicians. And one of the main reasons was that the city of Carthage was, and if we look at the African map, we can see, as well as the map on the right-hand side, that it really is strategically located. It has a fantastic port at the time. It was probably, one would say, the Singapore or the London or New York of its day in the medieval European period, where it was the center of the maritime trade that happened throughout the Mediterranean. And therefore, it was coveted by the big powers of the day. And so they all in succession always tried to seize the port, which was also one of the richest cities of its time because of the act of commerce that took place. So that's really by way of background that from the Romans to the Ottomans and the Phoenicians, there was continuous commerce, but there was also continuous political battles to subjugate and occupy the territory. So the people of Tunisia are no strangers to that. But coming more to the period that we want to discuss, in 1881, the French basically became the occupying power when Tunisia became a French protectorate of France. And it is only in 1956 that Tunisia then became independent with a whole wave of decolonization that happened. And this came as a result, as we saw throughout our continent, of resistance movements, etc. The independence of Tunisia led to the then Prime Minister Habib Bourguiba becoming the first president of independent Tunisia when he, in the following year, proclaimed Tunisia as a republic. He served for a long time, as we can see, from 1956 to basically 1987, when through ill health, General Zine Ben Ali, through what is sometimes euphemistically referred to as a medical coup, the Prime Minister Ben Ali had him declared incapable of continuing with his duties as president, and Ben Ali then became the president in a bloodless change of power. Now, the Ben Ali period saw this post-colonial period as something where the people of Tunisia felt that the independence had not delivered the freedoms, the improvement in quality of life that obviously people felt when the French were expelled. And so we saw essentially a one-party state under Ben Ali with strong police repression, etc. And this, although Ben Ali was continuously re-elected democratically, was elected in 1994, in 1999, in 2004, and in 2009 again. Resentment, protests, etc., continued to grow, even though it was harshly repressed and met with force by both the police and the military forces under Ben Ali. It was an incident with a young graduate who, as a street vendor, suffered police harassment, and what has become now, I suppose, a famous incident where, through sheer desperation, suffering the poverty, being the sole breadwinner in a large family, and the humiliation that he suffered at the hands of the police and the fact that the authorities, when he turned to them, not only did not help him, but worsened his situation, he then set himself on fire. And this incident resonated with so many Tunisians who felt the same way, who felt the desperation, who felt the grinding poverty and the repression of the Ben Ali regime, that it not only lit the fire for Tunisia's uprising, but became the spark also for what later became known as the Arab Spring. So to Tunisians, this was the revolution, and they refer to it as such, although the literature refers to it as the Jasmine Revolution. Tunisians prefer the word the Dignity Revolution, referring to the incident with this young man. So, Honorable Chairperson, with the Arab Spring and the fact that through the region there raged a demand by the general populace for change, for democracy, for freedoms, and what was then in academic circles referred to as the democratic deficit in the region, required not only for ways at looking how democracy and the experiment, quote unquote, of democracy needed to be installed throughout the region, but also how to ensure that the countries in the region don't implode into complete chaos, anarchy, violence, etc. In the case of Tunisia, the street protests led to the leadership coming together to try and find a way forward. Ben Ali had tried to initially repress. When that didn't seem to be sufficient, he then decided to make some promises of change. But again, the public did not accept this. And so he fled to Saudi Arabia, where he subsequently, years later, passed away. An interim government was then put in place in Tunisia, led by President Moncef Marzouki in 2011, and that lasted until 2014. His prime minister at the time during that period was Kais Essebsi, who later became the president during the 2014 elections. I think what's interesting about Marzouki is that during his period with Essebsi as the prime minister was that they made genuine attempts to find a way to usher in a period of democracy. They brought in, and Marzouki signed in place the 2014 constitution for the country, and also was able to try and put in place some of the institutions that would allow the country to continue in a more peaceful way, and for the country to not turn into a situation of chaos, lawlessness, and anarchy. The presidency of Essebsi in 2014 was a difficult one, because the country continued to struggle economically. The situation politically, although the institutions were being set up, there was still a sense that the country was not making the progress that people felt. And so there was still growing dissatisfaction. And I should point out, which I think is relevant for our discussion with Parliament, is one of the main issues was that while the Constitution allowed for a parliamentary democracy, the fact that parties were now allowed to participate, and there were many parties, and therefore coalitions needed to be built. This also created a weakness within a country that was now starting to look at democratic institutions, starting to look at multi-party democracy and how to manage the affairs of the state through the kinds of compromises, through the kinds of normal instruments that politicians and parties need to use in order to ensure that legislation is passed that is satisfactory and takes the country forward. As we know, sometimes and in many instances currently throughout the world, these coalitions have their weaknesses. These coalitions break down and can often lead to stalemate. And of course, to the public, this is not acceptable when the country then reaches that kind of situation. So the dissatisfaction was there. In 2019, President Said, the current president, was elected when SFC did not stand for president. He was quite elderly at the time. And so President Said took over as an outsider, in the sense that he promised to deal with the situation, and this resonated with people, that the way politics is done by those in parliament and the normal horse trading and activities that lead to stalemate, that are not really bringing forward the process that and looking at the expectations that the general population had since the Arab Spring, made him a very popular figure to people, because they pinned their hopes on the fact that he would in fact resolve that and be able to move beyond the stalemate. Now, the president tried to look at some of these problems, and in the first 2 years of his presidency took some steps to work with parties, but it became very clear that in his own view, he is not somebody who feels very strongly about the multi-party system. He had his own views about the weaknesses of that. He has some views also that the split of powers in the executive, namely the president on the one hand and the prime minister, who's really the head of government, who establishes the government and the cabinet, that these are all weaknesses in the constitution that was drafted, and therefore that there needs to be a reform of the constitution as well. The stalemate that arose led to the president eventually deciding to not only disband the government. He sacked the prime minister. He essentially took away the immunities, had the army encircle and literally lock parliament, and took power upon himself by a decree that established that he would run the country by decree. Now, I think to outside observers, what was surprising about this was that he, in fact, had large popular support in this. to outside observers the fact that the constitution was seen to be swept aside, that the president has taken both the legislative and judicial powers, and so on upon himself, was seen as a slide towards dictatorship to many analysts and to many outside observers. But in polls, it was shown that more than 60%, almost two-thirds of the population, actually agreed and supported what the president had done, because they felt that the stalemate was not moving the country forward. And perhaps a contemporary example of that kind of stalemate and what can happen if it does not get addressed decisively is, of course, the case of Lebanon, if we look at how difficult the situation was there and how this kind of stalemate can unfold. And so the president essentially explained that he did this in terms of the constitution, where he used the what we would refer to as a state of emergency to intervene in invoking that, and therefore felt that A, his actions were legal and constitutional, and B, that this was done in the interest of the country, that this was necessary because the country was essentially sliding into the abyss. And so the views by analysts remain divided, but at the popular level, the president had the support of the people to continue to do that. However, the understanding amongst at least some of those who were within civil society, strong actors, like the unions, like the Judges Association, etc. Many of them initially gave support precisely because they felt that if the president had a roadmap, if the president established a timeline for restoring democracy, then perhaps this was a good thing, because the president also promised to then get rid of corruption, to rid the government of politicians that had become self-serving, et cetera, et cetera. And so there was initial support from even some of the civil society actors, like the two biggest unions, and some of the associations, such as the Lawyers and the Judges Association, and so forth. And this, I think, also bolstered the position of the president. At the international community level, there was also support for the president to be able to do this, as long as he essentially stuck to his promise to use this as an opportunity to reaffirm the constitution, even if it meant making some changes and therefore having a referendum and proposals on where the constitution needs to be reformed, and then having elections. The international community, the United States, the Arab League, and so forth, many other countries in the international community, at least pledged support for the people of the country and support for the importance of reinstatement of democracy through a smooth transitional period. The fact that the president had usurped power in the way that he did without consultation and so suddenly, of course, this affected many of the politicians who spoke out quite vehemently against the president. And so in that sense, politically, the country was divided. But what also became clear is that the president did not stick to the 30 days through which this state of emergency could be instituted. In fact, it remained a fairly open-ended process, and this started changing public perception that perhaps we are in a very dangerous and precarious situation where we need the country to be returned to some different order. And so some concerns started arising both at the international level, but also amongst the populace, as more and more analysts also started to call on the president to make available a roadmap to establish or re-establish the work of the parliament, etc. So in this context, then, the president appointed a prime minister late last year. The president also started in January of this year an electronic platform for Tunisians to be able to make inputs on issues of the constitution, things that need to be amended, etc. And this will remain, this platform will remain open until March, when a technical team will sit down to draft these amendments to the constitution, which will then be put to a referendum by the middle of the year. And then the president also promised that there would be elections near the end of the year for members of parliament. So this has at least kept the international community content, I should say, with the fact that there seems to be a promise of movement in the right direction towards reinstituting full democracy, but that the process needs, therefore, to be more closely monitored in order to ensure that, in fact, this would take place. Civil society actors are increasingly putting pressure on both the president and the new prime minister and cabinet. I should say the prime minister, female, Najla Boma, let me just get her full name, I'm sorry, it's Najla, I'll get to the last name again, Bongdani. She's not only the first female prime minister in Algeria, in Tunisia, sorry, but also for the entire Arab world. So this was seen as a really important step also and certainly praised internationally. She's a geologist and a law professor, and also in that sense, essentially an outsider from the political framework. She has no history of political involvement in any party or in parliament, except for a short stint that she did in the education department, where she was tasked with looking at IMF funding projects and managing that process. So she has, with her new cabinet, now started to look at how to revitalize the economy. And I should say, Honorable Chairperson, you were spot on in the remark that you made about the time between when last our Bi-National Commission had met. Of course, during this kind of turmoil that I described, it was not possible to engage in the kinds of discussions that we need to attract investment and have business people engaging meaningfully in increasing our bilateral relations, especially in terms of economic diplomacy. And as things are now moving forward, this is indeed the intention that we have, and we are currently working very specifically to accelerate the efforts towards starting to get the JBC activated, have the high-level meetings that are necessary. And so at the level of officials, there's already engagement with our diplomats here in Pretoria, as well as through our embassy, to look at the various areas that we need to explore to accelerate this. But as I said, this requires the country to have the necessary institutions in place and to have the stability that is necessary for business people to engage. A government can lay the framework and can open the doors, but of course it ultimately depends on the business community themselves. Now, in that context, as I alluded to earlier, Tunisia is in a very difficult economic situation, as so many countries across the world find themselves, especially as we emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. The COVID pandemic had a particularly devastating effect in Tunisia. Given the small population, the number of deaths was considered to be extremely high for the country, and the government was blamed for its mishandling, as the analysts referred to it, of the pandemic. But like South Africa, for instance, and many other countries, even before the pandemic, there were already dynamics within the global economy that made things difficult. Rising inflation, supply chain disruptions, which were exacerbated, of course, by the pandemic, but also a country like Tunisia that depends largely on tourism. It forms a big part of its income in terms of GDP, was of course disrupted by the pandemic. And so the country faces rising unemployment, rising inflation, rising interest rates, and all of these things that we know in economics makes it extremely difficult for the government to generate the revenues to do the social development projects that are badly needed, but also to be looking ahead in terms of investment in longer term developmental aspects such as infrastructure in rail, roads, etc. The most immediate needs now being, of course, in health infrastructure and food and water insecurity. So the country has turned to the IMF, who has responded positively. There were, of course, deep concerns that the IMF may not grant the loans, especially since by the end of last year, Tunisia was again downgraded. And so there were concerns that the loans would either not be granted or, as was the case in two previous loans that had been made, the country didn't really see any difference from this. But the biggest concern was that the IMF and World Bank would impose austerity measures that the country doesn't need. And this meant that it was a very delicate balancing act for the president to consider his project of moving the country towards a referendum, elections, and setting up the political institutions that will support stability in the country when he may be faced with austerity measures that would be unpopular and may in fact fuel instability, as we know has been so often the case with these Bretton Woods institutions loans that countries make. But the World Bank has visited the country recently, and the outcomes of the discussions have been positive, and the Prime Minister has been able to therefore secure loans in various sectors, not all in one big loan, but rather in smaller proportions to various aspects that are needed. So the Prime Minister is currently looking at some of the deeper structural changes that are needed within the economy to try and reverse the current slowdown in the economy and to slowly get the country to move forward. And I think this provides the context, Chairperson and honorable members, for South Africa's entry back in to the bilateral relationship. Of course, the relationship isn't purely economic. There's strong people-to-people relations. And as I mentioned, tourism is a big aspect for the country. And we have significant expertise in that area as well, in the hospitality industry. But also politically, our countries have much to share on higher education and training. We have much to share on our political experience. And I mentioned earlier when I was talking about the historical aspect, President Marzuki, at the time when he was drafting the constitution, already had a background in looking at various aspects of law and governance, and had fascination for Mahatma Gandhi. And of course, South Africa's transition and Nelson Mandela. And in fact, he had traveled to South Africa to familiarize himself with our transition and how we had done what we did. So it wasn't surprising that the country had later established a truth and dignity commission to look at how to deal with the past and how to move forward. Given the atrocities that the people were subjected to. So there's much that can be shared also between our countries, even at the parliament-to-parliament level, Honorable Chairperson. So this is, Chairperson, the situation where we are now. The referendum is scheduled to go forward, and we are seeing some opposition parties still dissatisfied. They would have preferred that there should be a framework for broader public consultation, that it shouldn't be an electronic exercise, and that perhaps a broader and more detailed roadmap towards the elections and the role of Parliament should be elaborated. The President has not done so, but he has made some concessions where, for instance, instead of only having the electronic platform for people to comment, because not everybody has, I think there's about 60% penetration of internet into to homes in Tunisia. So he has agreed that in other areas, that at the local level, meetings and consultations could be held as part of informing the process. So, Chairperson, I think I'll leave it at that to conclude by saying the process going forward remains fragile. It requires continued support from countries like South Africa, and not condemnation or criticism, but support, respect for their sovereignty, but also opening up channels for a mutual benefit, such as trade and investment, which I think will help the country along the path that it's been set. There is much goodwill between our countries and the peoples of our countries, and we are therefore confident that the focus that we are now placing in, as you had pointed out, Chairperson, getting back on track with where these already existing instruments are will be beneficial to both countries. Jefferson, thank you very much. I will end the presentation there, and hopefully we can take some of the more detailed issues during the questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nazaruddin. Any addition from anyone from the department? I don't know if Ambassador is here. Earlier on, there was an indication that Ambassador Trauma, I think, is here. Are you here, Ambassador?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything to add?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. Let me also greet the Director General and my colleagues. There are just one or two additions that I would like to make. The first one is that the electronic consultation, which has kicked on from January, which will conclude on the 20th of March, is experiencing serious glitches in the sense that up to now, only about less than 5% of the people have participated in the process. There is an information that people are afraid to put their identity numbers and their addresses in order to indicate in the various areas of the constitution where they must say, I support the amendment of the constitution in this regard, the economy in this regard, et cetera, et cetera. So there is there's less than 5% participation. Secondly, the process is unable to reach out to many people, both in the urban and the rural areas, because only about 40 to 45% people in Tunisia have got internet. So this process, the weakness of this process is that it will leave out people in the rural areas, or it will leave out people who are not educated. Now, to attend to this, the president has appointed committees which will consult people, which will consolidate also their amendments. And the second thing that I wanted to indicate is that the refusal to convene a national dialogue, and the national dialogue would have included organized structures like labor unions, the largest is the UGTT, the political parties and other social formations, is going to deprive this process of a wide acceptance, because it will be seen to not to be inclusive. So by the time we arrive on the 25th of July, the less participation will mean that opposition parties will say that this process was not inclusive and therefore reject it. And then, of course, as we move towards the parliamentary elections on the 17th of December, there's a possibility that the people will vote for members of parliament, but the president, who has a dislike for political parties because he says they are trapped in corruption and the political strictures, he actually wants young people to participate as independents. My sense is that he is not likely to succeed in getting young people who are apolitical, who are unorganized, to get into parliament as members of parliament without any structures driving them into that. Therefore, you are likely to have a new constitution after the 17th of December, which has got a strong presidential system. The political parties are likely to be strongly weakened. The judiciary will have a semblance of independence, but it will be very weak. So the situation, as Mr. Nasreddin indicated, is very fragile. It's fragile and volatile. Yeah, let me end there.
Okay, Honorable members, we, unless there is any other addition, anything, DJ? Is everything no. Okay?
There's no other addition, Honorable Chair, but if you allow, maybe, I don't know whether we're going to take questions or maybe we'll move to Ukraine.
No, we are coming. We are coming.
Okay,
we are now going to input and questions. And it has been brought to my attention in that Masango Hore, you are our predecessor as the portfolio chairperson of this international relations and cooperation. So we want to continue to wish you well as a former member of parliament here and in the work that you are doing. Continue focusing on the strategic objectives as you are doing and continue to raise the flag of the Republic of South Africa at all material times. And that when we say come to the portfolio committee because you were at one point on this side of the arm of the state, you come without any hesitation. So we want to thank you for that and continue doing the good work, Ambassador. Honorable members will now take hands. Honorable Hendricks, Chairperson.
If you allow me, sir, mine is not the question now, but it's a request and stroke proposal that because some of us are leaving for other meetings, that we go into the Russia presentation.
It's okay, Muruti. It will be in this order. It will be Honorable Mishra, Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Bergman, and Honorable Noll, in that order. Murut.
Chairperson, I think you did not hear my proposal and request. It was
something
that...
over to you now. Didn't you say you want an opportunity to make a proposal?
Okay, sir. All right. Thank you, Aluhara. My proposal, sir, is that we get the second presentation before some of us go for another meeting, and then we'll do questions after the Russia-Ukraine presentation.
So you are changing the agenda?
Kiko Porra. Because of time.
There's a target like noise coming from your iPhone. Mr. William Faber is coming like noise.
Sorry, Chairperson. I just wanted to also concur that from my side that we do the Ukraine part now.
Yeah, but I never said we are discussing that matter. Now. So I never said I'm putting up that matter for discussion. We adopted an agenda when we started, and you honorable members were here. I hear what Muruti is saying, that it's a humble request. So I hear that. We'll return to that. We are having hands here that want to participate on the presentation that has been done now. And I said they will be in that order unless they are changing their minds. Honorable Hendricks, Bergman, and Noll.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Ambassador of Tunisia to allow Libyan students to come and apply there for visas to come and study in South Africa. We owe the Libyan people quite a lot, and I would like the ambassador to look at ways to make it easier for them to apply for visas, because as you know, there is no opportunity for them to do so in Libya. I also want to apologize, Honorable Chair, that I wasn't muted. But I unmuted because people were shouting wolf, as they're now shouting wolf as well, trying to prevent discussion or delay discussion on Tunisia. which is a very important supporter of South Africa. They are the tip, northern tip of Africa. You know, I'm from Cape Town. We are on the southern tip. So we have that special magnetic attraction between the southern tip and the northern tip. Although I'm worried that because of the Cape exit, you know, that is now being, you know, further strengthened with honorable members, you know, on the Ukraine issue, you know, the Cape exit people, they want to be a separate country. But that's a topic for another discussion. Mr. Nasir Deen must be complimented for a very comprehensive explanation last time on Libya and now on Tunisia. What he forgot was that there was an attempt for a union between Libya and Egypt and Tunisia when I was there in 74, and we actually marched to Egypt to try and promote it. But we'll update his history, but we want to thank him for bringing honorable members up to date. But Honorable Chair, I like your leadership. You're not allowing the wolves, you know, to try and scare us that there's a World War III on the horizon. There will never, ever be a World War III, because if that happens, then there's no world. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Hendricks. Honorable Dharma.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would love to see the CV of Honorable Hendricks. I'd love to know. I mean, he's been all over the world, and he always seems to be on the right side of wrong in terms of being in all these countries. But sometimes the wolves are dressed in the sheep's clothing, and we must always be aware of that.
Honorable Hendricks, all I like to know, you must have read your CV to
yes.
Honorable Darkman.
But, Chair, I must pay tribute. You and I might not always agree on the politics and which side of the political spectrum you sit on in the ANC, but your chairing, I've always complimented and I've always said that you've been a breath of fresh air since our last chairperson. But there's one chairperson in international relations that I owe my gratitude to and that I've really enjoyed immensely. And I hope that one day we are co-ambassadors somewhere. And that is the current ambassador of Tunisia, who has really, he was my first chairperson in international relations. And, you know, him and I enjoyed a very special relationship. And I see that he is trying to do a good job in Tunisia. And I must just pay him tribute and tell him that he is doing a sterling job there. Unfortunately, again, we find ourselves with a situation where we have to stick to a principle, and the principle is that the people should govern and the people should have their say. And when power is being usurped, we need to be able to say that, you know, we have to be able to say that there has to be a mechanism in place that would protect the will of the people, and that no one should be able to take power away from the will of the people. So we must be able to do whatever we can in our power to make sure that it is the will of the people that is being listened to. And so it's the recommendations that would be made that would make sure or ensure that the referendum is that has taken place, but that it's, you know, was that we might ensure that the referendum was actually held free and fair, that there was no intimidation, that everyone had the right to participate, everyone had the right to vote, that the referendum took place under, you know, under free conditions. And this is where we probably would find ourselves short. And of course, this is where I think we need to look at it again. I mean, we're sitting at a situation now where our ambassador at the UN is going to be neutral as it's been dictated. I mean, that's a weak position to take, let's say, in a situation like Ukraine. Understanding history, we're not about war, we're about peace. And the same should be said in a country like Tunisia. We should never be about being on the right side of wrong. We should always be about making sure that the people are protected, that the people are not exploited. And so it should be that when it comes to opportunities, that our government should never take an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Bergman. That is Kumbus. Oh, Nwala, Comrade Nwala, Honorable Nwala.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's equally echo the views of other members who warmly welcome the detailed briefing and the very informative briefing as it relates to the situation in Tunisia. Chair, from my side, I've got just some few clarification questions. I don't have a comment. I'm not sure, Chair, if I can assist Mr. Hendricks to hand over the CV to Bergman. But now, it will be outside this meeting.
You are welcome to do that. It's very comradely and honorable to do that.
Well, Chair, the first question that I would like to bring forward is the briefing says the security is stable, but it moves on and say, despite threats by small extremist groups, I don't think I get it properly. The security is stable, but there are threats by extremist groupings. Maybe if the ambassador can take us into the context to that sentiment. Another thing, Chair, that I would like to check with the presentation or from the presentation is that what are the fundamental causal links to these extremist battalions? Are they simply domesticated in such a way that they are only purposeful to the domestic purpose? Or are there any external support in all ways and all forms from external countries? Another question, Chair, would be what then is the state of the South African mission in Tunisia? Are we fine operating properly? There is nothing that has brought some form of threat or halting of our operations and other things. Is the embassy operating fine as normal? What then becomes the state of safety of South Africans in Tunisia? Has there been a way of getting in contact with South Africans in Tunisia to ensure that in this thing, because this does not look small, Chair, because if you check the sentiments of the briefing, you go to an extent of a possibility of a military coup, whether it's far or near, but we're not taking away the possibility of a military coup. So from where I'm standing, Chair, it's not just a small thing. Parliament being suspended from last year, July. So it tells you that there is a serious governance problem in the country. So South Africans should be assured there of their safety. I don't really get what has been the voice of three bodies. The African Union, what has been the voice in trying to intervene into the problem? Has there been envoys, conflict resolution convoys that have been sent to Tunisia to try and negotiate the problem to find an amicable solution? Equally, the North African regional leadership, what has been the interaction? How have they interacted with the situation in Tunisia? Lastly, Chair, the voice of the South African government. Has there been whether a statement that has been issued by DERCO or the president or whoever relevant as a form of a voice from the South African government in relation to what is happening in Tunisia. I'm asking this, Chair, because we have led the African Union, we have led the FADEC, and there have been paragons of silencing the guns in Africa. So in situations where turmoil is erupting in a country, whether in whatever region from the continent, our voice would be very important. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mpanza.
No, thanks, Chair, and greetings to all the participants of this meeting. And Chair, let me also echo your sentiments in extending condolences to the acting DG on the bereavement of her beloved one. And I think we really want to appreciate that, Chair. It's a sign of a dedicated and committed leader of administration. And we want to acknowledge that and commend it, that sometimes we have senior management who sometimes go beyond the call of duty. Know that how painful it is when you have lost the beloved one. So I want to echo your sentiments, Chair, and I think we are very much grateful to you, Acting DG, Ms. Losi, for what you have done. And secondly, Chair, let me also thank the presenter, the acting, the chief director who did the presentation, that when we put a request as a committee, they accede to that request without any doubt and with immediate effect, because we have requested that relevant ambassadors should be part of the meeting, and it has happened. And we also asked the presentations to include a little bit of historical background, which helps us a lot to understand. You can't understand the current without understanding the past. So it is, the presentation was very good, Chair. Chair, I don't want to spoil the mood of your meeting, but I think I must raise this issue. I'm a kind of a person who want to be straight with everyone, because I believe that truth will liberate us. I've observed this trend, Chair, particularly from Honorable Bergman, and I think it's something that we cannot keep quiet and then condemn. That of comparing the previous Chair and you, Chair, in terms of how you were conducting the meetings. I don't have a problem, Chair, with you conducting it. I agree with him on that aspect. But I think it's not a good thing to raise issues when someone is not even part of the meeting. And if we don't condemn this as a committee, it would like we are condoning this thing of saying it brings a fresh air. We did not have any system of managing the chairing of meetings. If Bergman is his own assessment, he must keep it to himself and not speak on our behalf, because I don't think our business is to measure the performance of each and every member of the committee in terms of how they participate or they engage or they chair the meeting. So I think, Chair, I think I must raise that issue. I'm very happy with how you chair, but I, at the same time, I can't say that I was not happy with how the other chair was chairing. Comrade Masango, who is now the ambassador, I know him very well. I was part of the fifth administration, was a chair of this, and greetings to you, Comrade Masango. Ambassador. So he was also a chair, and he was sharing the meeting, and So there are no comparative assessment that we should do. So I just want to raise that issue, Chair, very strongly, that we must desist from doing or making such comments, because they are very divisive and also very opportunistic, with due respect. Chair, let me come in to the presentation itself quickly. No, Chair, I think what we should do as a committee is just to do exactly what the presenter was saying, that we support the initiatives that are taking place in Tunisia. At the end of the day, we know as South Africans, at the end of the day, political problems and any other problems, they are resolved by the country on its own. We are a very good example of that as South Africans. We managed to resolve our very, very serious problems over dialogue and around sitting the table. So we must encourage that dialogue between or among Tunisians, but also we must give a space to diplomatic dialogue, whether bilateral or multilateral, and support all the institutions, international institutions that are handling this issue, your AU and your Arab World, Arab League, and the United Nations, and give them support. And as South Africa must also play our role in making sure that we strengthen our relationship with Tunisia, and make sure that at the end of the day, the Tunisian people, at the end of the day, I agree now with Honorable Beckman that at the end of the day, people should govern, and people should be allowed to express their democratic will. And anything contrary to that, as South Africa, and we are informed by our struggles and also our foreign policies, we subscribe to democratic principle and constitutional democracy, and we will support any initiative and through our department and through our minister and the deputy ministers representing us. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpanza. Honorable, is this an alien hand? Okay, I take it that it's an alien hand. Thank you very much for the matters that have been raised. And thanks, Honorable Banza, for raising the matter that you raised about Honorable Bergman. And I hope that, because it was putting me in an awkward position, I hope that from now onwards we can just focus on the work that we have to do and not do comparisons of who did what at what point and so on. I'm actually a very terrible person. You may have not seen it by now, Honorable Bergman. But just on a friendly note, I hope we can discontinue the comparisons, because people will never be the same. Both the lifestyles and the leadership styles and everything else about human beings will never be the same. We are not homogeneous. So everyone will have his own strength, weaknesses, whichever way, and then we must keep it like that. The most important thing is that each one of us, we must use the opportunity of being in the committee to contribute to the community we work on behalf of the people of South Africa from an oversight point of view, and bring together our strengths and weaknesses to harness the situation so that we can achieve our strategic goal. So that is the most important thing. I want to support what Honorable Ngola was saying about the AU, because I think that the AU should by now have done something more concrete other than just calling for the engagement to continue between the the warring groups within Tunisia. Things like direct engagement between the AU, whatever it may be, envoys or whoever they may send, to continue to be closer to the situation, so that the AU as a body overarching the affairs in the African continent can then be seen concretely doing something around that particular situation in Tunisia, and not only in Tunisia, but also in other parts of the African continent where, for instance, you see coups taking place and so on. A bit of a, not an aggressive stance, but a bit of a more incisive, open, transparent, visible action in the form of engaging with all other parties involved in Tunisia so that the situation can be brought under control. We will now give over to the department to respond. I don't know who will start, who will conclude. Over to Acting DG to command your forces.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Before I hand over to Fadil, I would like to also agree with the presenter, Fadil, and members of the committee, and encourage Parliament to engage and consider creating relations with the Parliament of Tunisia, because they have a vibrant parliament just like ours. And Chair, in the past, I was an ambassador in Tunisia. In the past, we also tried to share our experiences with the women in parliament, because after the revolution, the parliament in Tunisia opened up and had more women in parliament, including the deputy speaker for the first time being a woman then. So we shared these experiences by bringing in the parliamentarians from South Africa. Similarly, I'm not quite sure whether they still want that at some point. They wanted to have the TRC of their own. We used the expertise of our late Archbishop Tutu, who engaged with the Tunisians. Yes, indeed, Honorable Chair, we need to monitor the situation in Tunisia and engage with the Tunisians. With your permission, Honorable Chair, I would like to request Fadil to respond, and after that, our ambassador. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Ambassador, preceded by Mr. Nazi.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you, Acting DG. The question with regards to the role of the AU, I think that the Honourable Chairperson is correct in saying that we need to look at mechanisms by which we can be more action-oriented in terms of engagement. As we know, during the period of COVID, this was not possible. And as I alluded to in my presentation, we are keenly aware now that the opportunities that are there need to be certainly utilized, and as we emerge, it is mutually beneficial for us to look at and explore all possible areas of cooperation, including, as I think DG pointed out, the sharing of experiences that we had in our TRC, as well as the question of women empowerment broadly. Within the Arab world, Tunisia has been, even before the appointment of the Prime Minister, as one of the countries that had much more engagement at various levels of society and within government of participation of women. And so I think we have much more to share with Tunisia and through Tunisia also within the broader scope of the region. I think there are other areas of our constitution that we can explore as the question comes up about the potential tensions that will exist within the constitution development process between centralization of power around the president as opposed to the power that and scope that is given to parliament and the independence of the three spheres, namely the executive, the legislature, and of course the judiciary. There seems to be, as our ambassador correctly pointed out, a tendency by the president to want to centralize more of the powers around the president in those areas. And so there's I think, a lot of scope for us to be working together at various levels. And we are certainly actively looking at which ones we can take up. So thank you very much for that. Within the AU context, of course, we will discuss with our colleagues who deal with the AU and to see to what extent there is engagement and whether we cannot prompt more active engagement. I should like to add also that just recently the AU had its summit with the EU, and President Said was also represented amongst the heads of state, as was our president, at the summit with the EU. And the president of Tunisia used the opportunity to have bilaterals and, of course, to solicit support for the institutions that he needs to build and affirm, especially with regards to the economy. And so there have been pledges of support, and I'd like to mention, for instance, that countries like France, Qatar, the UAE, Germany, Italy, and the United States have been strong contributors, if I can put it that way, despite the happenings within the country. Contributors in the sense that there is a support for the country to move towards democracy. And whilst there's been unease about the way the president went about it, I mentioned in my presentation, perhaps in passing, that if we contrast that with what has happened in Lebanon, we see that how it can disintegrate very quickly. And so the Tunisian president has taken a decisively different path. Instead of allowing the stalemate and for a weakened president to continue to call upon prime ministers to call to form governments unsuccessfully and letting the state implode and letting the public continue to suffer, he took a decisive step. And this is very different. It's not something that I think many analysts expected and political commentators expected. So it was therefore also not unexpected that there would be perhaps a silence to decide what to make of it and how best to then engage within that process. The Tunisian public have decided that they want to give the president the benefit of the doubt, if I may use that word. But of course, there are academics, commentators, external players who are expressing their misgivings and saying, well, he needs to come with a clear roadmap because we cannot just take his word for it. And so he seems to be making some concessions. And in particular, I think the Prime Minister, who, of course, was not elected, was appointed by him. And so she's in a slightly precarious position, but she seems to be making some of the kind of overtures, the moves, the implementation of certain actions that gives an indication that the country is moving in that direction. But as we concluded, it remains fragile, it requires support, and it requires active engagement. So we will continue to do that. With regards to the stability and security, at the moment, we are not seeing the kinds of mass protests that we had during the revolution and during some of the other periods where the public really responded in a way that showed greater satisfaction. In fact, I mentioned that in the polls there was strong support for the president, and this surprised many observers outside the country, because the sudden sweeping aside of the constitution, the legislature, the firing of the prime minister, etc., and essentially taking control by ruling by decree was considered by many analysts as a coup, a bureaucratic coup, as they termed it. So it was surprising to see that almost 2/3 of the population responded positively to this. And so in that sense, the center holds and the country is relatively stable as it goes through this transition, which we will see through to the end of the year when there are these elections for parliament, and then the prime minister would essentially work with the parties to form a new government. Now, in that sense, it's stable, and so on. But we are saying that it's fragile, and the extremist groups who are in minority are there. The security establishment is dealing with that quite effectively for now. But of course, there's within the neighborhood, Libya is next door, and from the south, there are also threats of extremist groups who do from time to time pose a potential threat. We mustn't forget that the terrorist incident that happened on the beach that was televised, and we saw the horrific scenes when there was the attack in Tunis. These had a major impact on the economy because it brought tourism to a halt completely, and this was pre-COVID. So they've been dealing with this fairly well, although it's got its external dimensions, as well as of course sympathizers internally who feel that the way in which certain groupings are being not included. I mentioned, for instance, the Berbers or the Amazigh community. In the region, many of them feel that their culture, etc., is not being recognized. And so the issue of what we, again, would term minority rights, is an important element that needs to be addressed, because there are strong grievances amongst them about their language, etc. And so we see in countries like Morocco the language being recognized. We've seen in some of the other countries in the region some recognition being given to their communities and their cultural rights. But it's a work in progress, and these are the kinds of elements within society that has to be monitored, to ensure that this does not become a threat from a security point of view. So in that sense, we are saying it's fragile and it needs to be monitored. I think I have answered the questions that were directed towards me, Honorable Chairperson. I I would like to hand over to His Excellency Masango, our ambassador, to perhaps comment on any of these questions as you might wish. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nasiruddin. I want to just make a small addition with regard to the clarification question from Honorable Ngola. And he was asking why our report is saying the situation in Tunisia is stable, but there are extremist groups. So let me start with the stable. The situation is indeed stable. Tunisia has experienced periodic impositions of state of emergency since 2015 up to now. The state of emergency has been extended to the 31st of December 2022. So as all these processes are taking place, the electronic consultation, the referendum on the 25th of July, and the parliamentary elections on the 17th of December, all of them are taking place under a state of emergency. So the situation is also stable in the sense that the police as well as the military have been clamping down on all possible mass protests. But as Mr. Nasiruddin indicated, the opposition itself is actually very weak and unable to master, you know, nationwide protests. And the largest labor union, which is the UGTT, a COSATU of Tunisia, for now it has got good relations or lukewarm relations with the president, and it's not likely to organize a mass strike against the president. But they have made a call that a national dialogue, what you can call our own CODESA, a national dialogue is important, where warm bodies can freely express their views instead of this cold electronic platform. Now, the military coup is very unlikely in Tunisia because the police and the military are actually on the side of the president. So it's not likely that there could be a coup in Tunisia. And let me also say that with regard to the situation, there have been terrorist attacks. In 2015, there was a terrorist attack at the Bardo Museum. In 2016, there was a big terrorist attack at the beach. In 2020, there was a terrorist attack against the American embassy. There have been sleeper cells that have been discovered, whose operatives have been found in France and other countries. Now, there was a question from Honorable Ngola whether the extremist groups are from the external countries or within the country itself. I would say that the extremist groups must be understood within the context of the Sahel region itself. The Sahel region, which makes up your Mali, your Burkina Faso, your Libya, your Sudan, Niger, Chad, Libya, etc., etc. The whole region, North Africa and the Sahel, is awash with sleeper cells and operatives of the ISIS and Daesh. And there are, of course, countries that are accused of funding these formations. So these terrorist attacks that happened in Tunisia are actually part of the sleeper cells that are being arrested from time to time by the security forces in this country. So the extremist groups are the ones that have made attacks in France, have made attacks in other countries, and when those people were arrested, they discovered that they actually came from Tunisia. And some of them came from Libya and these countries that have already earlier on mentioned. There was also a question whether the embassy is safe. Yes, the embassy is safe. Tunisia is unlikely to have a civil war. And 2 weeks ago, We have been visited by the SANDF, the officials who are dealing with throwing evacuation plans. So they have drawn that evacuation plan. I hope it will be submitted to the department. It will also be submitted to us. So that, because there's been a request that all the machines must have evacuation plans. There are South Africans who are doing business in Tunisia. We are in contact with some of them. There are a few of them who are working here. I'm not aware of some who are students in Tunisia. But so far, we have not had a problem about South Africans coming here to say that they feel unsafe as a result of the situation that is obtaining in the country currently. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ndalima Sambo. Thanks very much, Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for allowing us to present on Ukraine. I had alluded earlier on that Ms. Mazibuko will present. However, I've also invited Ambassador Groenewald, but he's evacuating, but he's willing to join. He is on standby, he will join, but he's on the route evacuating. I've also, Chair, invited the Acting DDG for Global Governance and the Chief Director of Human Rights. And because of the question that was posed earlier on, I've invited Mr. Laher, who's now in New York. I managed to wake him up and he's agreed to join the meeting. With your permission, Honorable Chair, may I kindly invite Ms. Mazibuko?
Thank you, Acting Director General, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Phumzile Mazibuko. I'm the Chief Director, Central and Eastern Europe, Nordic and Baltic States. I am honored this morning to brief the Committee on Developments in the Ukraine. Our humble apology that we had not prepared a presentation for the committee. As we're all aware, the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine has been an ongoing conflict since 2014. And we do know that Russia and Ukraine are close. They have a history. So the role of history in geopolitics in that region is intertwined between these two countries. However, I'll focus on the current conflict that we are experiencing. We have all heard that on the 21st of February in this year, the President of the Russian Federation signed two decrees recognizing two regions in the Ukraine, the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, as independent sovereign states. He also signed a treaty of friendship, cooperation, and mutual assistance between these regions and the Russian Federation. And of course, we know that on the 24th of February, forces were launched, the Russian forces launched a special military operation into the eastern Ukraine. It may be recalled that the current buildup of the Russian military buildup had been taking place on the Russian side since March 2021. The Russian narrative had been that the movement of military personnel and equipment remained within their right to move within their own borders. They also had what was called Allied Resolve military exercises that were held between Russia and Belarus on the 9th of February till the 20th of February, which unsettled the West mainly, accusing Russia of possible provocation. We must also remember that exactly 7 years ago, in February 2014, Russia had stopped an offensive by the Donbas troops against the Ukrainian army. And being under pressure from the West, and during this time, the Minsk agreements were negotiated, and Ukraine and Russia signed the Minsk agreements. I'd like to just talk about the Minsk agreements, because you'll know that the Minsk agreements were a series of international agreements that sought to end the war between the Donbas region and the Ukraine. They were put together by a trilateral contact group on the Ukraine in 2014, consisting of Ukraine, Russia, and the Organization for Security and Economic, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE. The mediation by leaders of France and Germany as part of the Normandy summit participated in achieving these Minsk protocols. And after the extensive talks, they were signed, and representatives of the contact group agreed to sign the agreements. These agreements were multiple agreements and that stopped the fighting in the region, and they were aimed to implement an immediate ceasefire. The first Minsk agreement in 2014 unfortunately failed to stop the fighting, and it was followed by a revised and updated agreement, Minsk II, which was then signed in February 2015. This agreement consisted of a package of measures, including a ceasefire, withdrawal of heavy weapons from the front line, release of prisoners of war, constitutional reform in Ukraine, granting self-government to certain areas of Donbas, and restoring control of the state border to the Ukrainian government. While also the fighting subsided following the signing of these agreements, some say that the fighting has never completely ended, and that the provisions of the agreement were never fully implemented. The Normandy format parties agreed that the Minsk II agreement remains the basis for any future resolution of the conflict. And I go into detail on this particular issue because that has been the stance that South Africa supports. There's also an important articulation which, with the military action that has happened on the 24th of February 2022, that Russia has been voicing its concerns with the West. And mainly these concerns revolve around Ukraine's aspirations around moving further west. The Security Council, the security concerns include that the NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, must not accept new members, including Ukraine. And the red line for Russia has been that Ukraine must not be allowed to be a member state of NATO. And we also know that Russia has concerns about deployment of military hardware on its borders, and that they also they see a military buildup on its borders as a big security concern. I'd also like to mention that the issue of Russia has of Russia and Ukraine has since that 2014 been discussed as a standalone issue at the United Nations Security Council. And I'm glad that my colleagues from the global governance will be able to touch more on this issue. And I will not go into the current Security Council because my colleagues are here. In terms of the current situation, our ambassador in the Ukraine has been seized with supporting all our nationals to be able to have safe passage out of the very fast changing and dangerous situation. The South African Embassy created a WhatsApp group for all South African citizens to keep them updated on developments and to also ensure that they have information. The recommendation has been that our nationals should try and leave on the safest possible routes, which were identified. We are engaging with countries in the region, embassies from Eastern and Central Europe. We are advocating for the safe passage of all South Africans to ensure that they come out of the Ukraine safely. I know that our ambassador in Poland is currently at the Polish border, which has been the center of most of where the people have been using to leave and has been assisting South Africans there as well. South Africa has also articulated we've actually kept engaging our partners, the local foreign embassies here. We are in contact with the embassy of the Ukraine and the embassy of Russia, as well as we've interacted with the ambassador of Poland and are continuing to ensure that South Africans make sure that they come out safely back into South Africa. I will hand over to the acting DG with the view that my other colleagues can give more information on the multilateral aspect of the development of Ukraine.
Thank you, Ms. Phumzile. But maybe before we hand over to the multilateral colleagues, I would love to invite our ambassador, Ambassador Groenewald, who's on the road, as I earlier said, he may not be able to switch on his video. They are driving on a convoy now, but he has agreed to give a perspective of what is happening on the ground. Ambassador Groenewald, can you hear me earlier on?
Yes.
I know that.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Ambassador. Thank you.
I'm here. And good afternoon to the honorable members and the other colleagues. Can you hear me?
Yes, good afternoon, Ambassador Bruno. Continue.
Yes. Sorry, the line is very, very, is not very consistent. So if I break away, apologies. Hello?
Yes.
We can hear you, Ambassador. Clearly.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Are there any specific issue that you want me to address?
Over to you, DG.
Ambassador, can you touch on the situation in Ukraine? Of course, without because I know you are on a convoy, treading carefully on the security side. But can you also touch on the support you've provided to South Africans, including other African countries, and the support we're also receiving from South Africans at large who are willing to assist? Maybe we'll start with the security situation in Ukraine and then build up to the support and the consular services, Ambassador. Thank you, Ambassador.
Sorry. Hello? Hello?
We can hear you, Ambassador. Continue.
Okay. Sorry. What has happened in the last couple of days is that our first focus was on assisting our nationals. We got, of course, people were registered on our embassy database. But as is usual, not everybody registers. We created the WhatsApp, as Ms. Mazibuke said, and started getting people out. That was the message. The initial border was the border with Poland, but within a day or two, that border became totally congested. And you've seen in the media also the incidences of that have been reported regarding to racism. It has become a very, very big issue, not just for our nationals, but also nationals from other African countries, as well as North Africa and the Middle East. And the main reason for the start of this is that initially Ukraine was developing a priority list of people coming through the border, and the priority was Ukrainian women and children, and of course other people were then separated into lines for men and women and children, and of course in the end the foreigners were also not left to go through. This created, of course, when you can see who's a foreigner and who's not a foreigner, that created the issue for us. And many people were then stuck and had to sit there for a couple of days. In the meantime, we have been engaged by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I spoke to the Deputy Minister yesterday. They are now, they told me that they've sent in more people there to address this issue, to make sure that this doesn't happen. Because they are very sensitive for this whole issue, especially in view of this whole definition that they are being called Nazis, and they believe it's there. It's part of the propaganda measures. My message to them was that doesn't matter what happens now. We want our people to be safe. We want our people to be treated with dignity. So we want a signal on the ground to see how you are solving this. And how what you are doing. With regards to the other border areas, it seems that the issues are not as difficult there. We are on our way to the Hungarian border because we believe that's probably one of the better places to cross for now. And of course, the Hungarian government have been very much assisting us getting people over. In fact, we've worked with them and the Indian embassy in Kiev to get people across. With buses, they would go to the rail station at the end, and then come together at the university there, which was very close, and then would take them to the borders. With regards to the Romanian crossing, it seems that was initially a problem because people were not allowed over the borders if they didn't have a visa, but that has been solved in the meantime. I think it was done through interaction back in Pretoria with the embassy. Moldova, I've gotten feedback that it is people are coming through and there's no real problem. That's the feedback we are getting. So at this stage, the next phase of the operation, of course, the people that have been brought out of Ukraine, what happens to them? They are at this stage being put, we are developing lists so that we know who's there. And our embassy in Poland and embassy in Hungary is very actively working on that together with the volunteers and some other colleagues of DERCO on the WhatsApp groups. So the next phases will be then, their safety and where do they stay in the other countries, the border countries, and then how do they return to South Africa. Some of the problems that we are seeing on the ground is that there are two South Africans they are in a city called or town called Sumy, which is on the border of Russia, and they are we're quite concerned about that. Maybe DG can provide more information on that issue. And just on our movement, we are moving to the border of, like I said, with Hungary. And we have Hungarian diplomats with us, and of course private people, as well as the ambassador from Nigeria and his staff. DG, I don't know if there's any other questions, but I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. Maybe just to come in with the South Africans that next to the Russian border, we have engaged the Russian ambassador. We have also engaged our ambassador in Moscow to appeal that our students, they are given a safe passage. It will be very dangerous for them to come through Kyiv and go through Hungary or Romania or Poland. So we were proposing that they cross over to Russia, as that would be, but we need to negotiate. We're negotiating with the Russian ambassador, and we are instructing our ambassador in Moscow. And we are also, once done, there's a group of South Africans who are in London and in Europe, and particularly one in London, who have offered to assist because we need safe transportation for our students when they cross over to Russia. I must also say that South Africans who are abroad have really, really assisted, be it in form of, you know, trying to accommodate our students and raising funds to bring them home. And the Polish government, Romania, and the special Polish and Hungary. Maybe with your permission, Honorable Chair, I will now request the Acting Deputy Director General, Ambassador Mloyi, who is also the Chief Director on Human Rights, to say a few words. And after that, especially, there was a question on our voting pattern, our statements and so forth. And I'm also grateful, Honorable Chair, you understand it's, I think, 5 a.m. now in New York. Mr. Laher, who's responsible for the United Nations, will also come in and as they are there negotiating and have firsthand information on what is happening in New York and the General Assembly. Ambassador Mloyi, if you can come in. Okay, if Ambassador Mloyi is still struggling, Mr. Laher, Zahir?
Thank you. Thank you, Acting DG, and thank you very much, colleagues. I hope I'm audible. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to brief you today on developments on Ukraine. I will try to be brief and outline what are the developments at the United Nations generally, specifically the Security Council and the General Assembly. On the matter. Just to indicate, firstly, of course, that both Ukraine and the Russian Federation are members of the UN, with the Russian Federation being the successor state of the Soviet Union. This was agreed during the dissolution process of the Soviet Union, and all former republics of the Soviet Union, including Ukraine, had agreed that the Russian Federation would assume the seat of the Soviet Union. The matter of Ukraine, as Ms. Mazibuko had indicated, the matter of Ukraine has been on the UN's agenda for a number of years, specifically following the events in the Crimea in 2014. In light of recent developments, the Security Council, which is the body of the UN seized with the mandate of maintaining international peace and security, has met several times in the last few weeks at the request of Ukraine. The President of the Security Council during the month of February, coincidentally, was the Russian Federation. That was due to the fact that there is a rotation of the presidency in English alphabetical order. And it just so happened that during February, when the Council had been meeting on the matter, the Russian Federation had coincidentally been the President of the Council. A resolution prepared by the Western countries in the Council, tabled by the US and Albania primarily. Albania is currently serving as the Eastern European representative on the Security Council. A resolution was put forward condemning Russian action in Ukraine, and it was tabled on the 25th of February. This resolution was vetoed by the Russian Federation. All Council members except
for Russia, which vetoed the resolution by voting no, and China, India, and the United Arab Emirates abstained on the vote. The rest of the council members, 11, voted in favor, but of course the resolution was not adopted because of the veto. Following that, following the failure of the Security Council to adopt a resolution on the matter, there is a process within the UN system which is not often utilized, but it is a mechanism which allows for a matter to be referred to the General Assembly, a matter related to international peace and security, noting that the Security Council is the body tasked with the mandate of maintaining international peace and security in terms of the UN Charter. However, when the Security Council is unable or unwilling to act, then the matter can be referred to the General Assembly as another principal organ of the organization. So in that context, in the context of the fact that the Security Council was unable or unwilling to act due to the Russian veto, the matter has now been referred to the General Assembly. In this context, the General Assembly has been meeting for the last 2 days and will convene again today for a debate on the matter. This then allows all members of the General Assembly to participate, whereas in the Security Council thus far, the matter has only been dealt with by the 15 members of the Council itself, of which, of course, South Africa is not a member at this stage. We were a member in our term, as colleagues would recall, ended at the end of 2020, in December 2020. So now the matter has been before the General Assembly, and the General Assembly has been holding a debate, as you may have seen in the media. It started on Monday morning. There's a very long list of speakers, as the interest among all member states is there's a keen interest to participate. South Africa delivered a statement yesterday on the matter as a member of the General Assembly. The primary focus of South Africa's intervention was to call for an end to the conflict, and specifically to call for political dialogue and diplomatic endeavors to resume to ensure that that the conflict is resolved, specifically in the context of the implications and ramifications of the conflict on not just European security, but also on global security. South Africa also made a point that the issue of Ukraine should not, and unfortunately we're seeing this happen, but it should not derail other multilateral processes. I, for example, am in New York for a completely different process related to negotiating a cybercrime treaty. But all these processes are now being affected by what is going on in Ukraine. And what is happening is the atmosphere in the UN towards working towards consensus making, negotiations in other processes are all being derailed because of the disagreements on Ukraine. And that is having an impact on the manner in which the organization is working. In addition, we also raised the matter that while Ukraine and the focus on Ukraine should be there in the context of what is happening, the disturbing events that are taking place, we should also ensure that as the organization, as member states, we should also give due attention to other conflicts. While this is occurring, while the incursions and the conflict in Ukraine is occurring, other conflicts persist, whether it is in the Sahel region, in Mali, whether it is in Yemen, these conflicts persist, and we should not ignore those issues and also give due attention to those issues. Finally, South Africa also highlighted the specific plight of people fleeing Ukraine, specifically Africans that are leaving Ukraine and people of African descent. And this is a matter that's been raised by several African and Caribbean delegations, expressing concern at the fact that that people of African descent and from Africa are having problems at European border posts and are being allegedly discriminated at, which is making their evacuation difficult. The debate, as I said, will continue today. Thus far, the resolution on Ukraine has not been tabled. We anticipate that later today in New York, there will be a resolution that will be tabled by the same drafters of the resolution in the Security Council. This resolution will now be tabled in the General Assembly. The draft resolution that will be tabled condemns, and I'll briefly, as I conclude, I'll briefly indicate what is in that draft resolution. It condemns the Russian Federation's declaration of the military operation in Ukraine, as well as the decision to increase the readiness of its nuclear forces. It deplores the Russian Federation's, and I'm reading the wording of the resolution, aggression against Ukraine in violation of the UN Charter. And it demands that the Russian Federation immediately and unconditionally reverses its decision related to the areas that it had recognized at Donetsk and the Luhansk regions of the Donbas region. The draft resolution does indicate a little and does reflect a little on the need for a political process and the resolution of the negotiations and mediation as my colleague had spoken about the Minsk agreements and the formats that were created. However, the challenge it has been from our perspective and the perspective of many delegations is that the language in the paragraphs referring to the role of the Russian Federation is unfortunately not conducive to creating the space for diplomacy and other initiatives, such as mediation. The draft resolution is also silent on addressing the security needs of the parties, which unfortunately, in the context of what is occurring, constitutes a major stumbling block to making substantive progress in working towards the resolution of the conflict. Our main concern is that, whereas as member states of the UN, we should be working towards bringing the parties closer together, promoting negotiations. There's been an initiative to get the parties to sit around the negotiating table in Belarus. We should not be driving a deeper wedge between the parties. Instead, we should be promoting dialogue. We should be promoting the possibility for the resumption of negotiations. We have also not, as member states, been given an opportunity to negotiate the draft, which is very unusual, and it does not allow us to make these comments that this is how we think the resolution should look and what we should be doing. Usually at the UN, we are all we participate in a process of negotiating to reach agreement. In this case, we have been given a text that is there. It's fait accompli. We've got to take it or leave it. So we are currently looking at it and working with our team and the minister as well to seek guidance on how we will vote on the resolution. But as yet, member states have not voted on any resolution pertaining to the matter. So that's where we are in summary, Acting DG and colleagues, honorable members. We are free to answer any questions. Thank you, Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Zahid. I think this concludes our presentation, Honorable Chair, and we are ready to take any questions or comments. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Ambassador. So we are unable to get Ambassador Mloy.
He had texted me that he had challenges with his mic. Ambassador Mloy, are you okay now? Ambassador Mloy?
Okay, if he's not available. Yeah. Acting DG, if he's not available, that's okay. I think it's a very useful briefing. It's now strengthening the portfolio committee and giving us assurance and certainty that the department is attending to the problems that are there, particularly the necessary evacuation of South Africans, because it's important to assure the parents of the students, their relatives, the students themselves, and other people who are involved, it may be business people, to assure them that something is being done practical to make sure that their safety is attended to and evacuated safely out of Ukraine. That's the most important part, which I think we must also thank and congratulate South Africans who are based elsewhere in the world, who are volunteering to assist. And maybe at that point, Acting DG Ambassador, I should indicate that I got a call yesterday from someone in Britain who is a South African by origin, who I will get the name now, who are suggesting that they are a team of about six people who are South Africans, and they are working hard to try and assist. I think it's Haley. And that matter, I think you dealt with it yourself yesterday or the day before yesterday. So we appreciate that. She was saying that they are suggesting, among other things, to the department, is to get some of the people to Germany so that for 30 days or so, they can be given temporary relief in as far as settling in Germany is concerned for 30 days, so that in 30 days they could work on getting them out of Germany to South Africa. I'm now going to give over to the honorable members to raise their question. And thank Zaire for waking up and coming to the portfolio committee and giving us the update both on the United Nations Security Council and the General Assembly. We look forward to South Africa maintaining its stance in as far as our historical relationship and how we must use those platforms like the United Nations and its ancillary bodies, how we must use those platforms to propagate our position of ensuring that we achieve peace through negotiation, through unending engagement. Honorable members, we now have the opportunity to raise whatever matters. I'll start with Honorable Bergman, Honorable Bela, Honorable Nola, Honorable Cheti, Honorable Msani, in that order.
Chair, thank you very much. And I'm sorry some of the members took offense to my comments on chairmanship. I was actually complimenting everyone, just some more than others. Just to say that the Democratic Alliance has never said that everyone is innocent or some are guilty and others are innocent in the situation. We do acknowledge that NATO has been creeping up onto the Russian border, where there has been an informal agreement as to where as to how far NATO would be going. Of course, that is a situation that negotiations and talks should be sorting out. It's not to make a country like Ukraine responsible for, of course. We do believe that leadership such as the US and NATO has, from my own humble opinion, has been weak. And I have been saying that as well. I think something like sanctions has been should have been a long time coming. It should have been about a few weeks ago, months ago. It shouldn't be something that just takes place now. So I do believe it has been badly handled from the world, and it was something that should have happened a long time ago. That we definitely had been calling for that quite a while back. My concern around a position such as the Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 agreements is that it was opened up to the interpretation of Russia. And President Putin has shown in the past that his interpretation has often been very different to the interpretation of people in, let's say, Ukraine or people of the West. So you can have an agreement in place, you can sign an agreement, but then when it comes down to the crux of the agreement, you can, someone like President Putin can come around and say, but that's not how he remembers signing it. That he remembers it being agreed to in this translation and that the wording was different. So we must remember that the agreements, when we talk about diplomacy and we talk about agreements and pacts, Russia's not always a reliable partner in that regard, not necessarily because they're evil or bad, more because they're actually, it's maybe lost in translation. The Donbas region, one of the biggest issues that we've been saying is that, like the Crimea issue, when Russia just happily took over what was the buffer and walked in to disputed territory without anyone really putting up much of a fight, is that
Russia was flooding the Donbas region with passports. And again, no one was saying anything. That was, you know, again, gave rise to what I was talking about in terms of weak leadership. We saw what was taking place in the Donbas regions, exactly what was like taking place in Georgia. And these are the escalations to war or to what was happening in Georgia. So this is where we have been calling South Africa to use its proximity in BRICS to speak to Russia, and not in a brotherly way, just to say, could we negotiate this? Could you not perhaps speak to NATO or Ukraine? You know, there were times in which we could have reclaimed some of the lost space we had on the world stage since the Madiba days, basically to just try and rein in some of the gains that Putin had been making on behalf of the West, not for the West, but actually for world peace. What we're actually now seeing, again, I must just say, when we worked on things like home away from home, my experience with that was I had ambassadors, I had members of DERCO, such as the DG. We worked very closely with them, and we had great relationships. Part of the debriefing there was the fact that you would want forward-thinking people planning and saying, well, I believe there's going to be a war here. There's going to be an escalation. I think what our citizens are saying in Ukraine was that the embassy was a little bit late in their preparations, in that surely they would know or preempt the fact that there was going to be a war or believe that there was going to be a war, and that there should have been a little bit more preparation, and not in Ukraine necessarily, but outside Ukraine. What would they do to evacuate? How would they support in South Africa to have a 24-hour, 24/7 control line? Now, the Haley you speak about, and there are many others that started a volunteer line, I put my name on to help and volunteer, and members of DERCO, and I say it very clearly because Mrs. Ambassador Mazibuko is one of those people that were on that group, made it very difficult for me to be on it because of which party I belong to. And when this is finished, I am going to make something about it, because they got political at a time when it's war. We should be worrying about getting our citizens out of a country. We should not be worried about whose party is doing what, which color of shirts are we wearing when we're trying to get people out. This isn't politics. This is about getting people out of a country. This is about getting people across a border. And I must say this, that some of the phone calls that I've had from some of the people I've recorded, it's outrageous that we've had to have these sort of conversations where they've lied and said that they had people phoning them to say that they needed to know which party is behind this before they get rescued from them. No one in a war situation is going to phone and ask which party is rescuing them before they get rescued. That's an outright lie. And I'm sure that Ms. Mazibuko and our acting DG is, you know, they're going to have to investigate why one would put the risk of citizens in grave danger because of politics when we're trying to get people across the border. The people of South Africa must always come first. Consular services must always be the most objective part, the most operative part of DERCO, not politics. We have enough political deployees in DERCO. We cannot have DERCO members playing politics as well. That's when it becomes dangerous. In terms of the racial profiling, I condemn it in the strongest terms. We cannot have a situation where anyone is racial profiled. Please, I make that very, very clear. But I have to also make it very clear that in a situation of war, what we're hearing on the borders, and as I say, I am actively involved because sometimes I can't go through DERCO because of politics. I have to use connections in Poland, and I have to use connections in other countries. what's happening is Ukraine are trying to get their women and children out of Ukraine, and they're coming across citizens from other countries that are in the way. How they talk is saying in the way. They're not using color as a proxy. They're using countries as the proxy. But what I would say, though, is that this is what happens when we find ourselves also, we must make sure that we talk about peaceful times, that when we vote, we must make sure that we end war. War is never good for anyone. War is never an option. We must never try to vote on the side of warmongering people that are trying to cause a war. So it's not about emotional talk now today. Today is about taking a country like Ukraine that is being used as a proxy between both the East and the West, and making our ambassador understand that today's vote should be about ending what can become or escalate into something far greater when you talk about two nuclear powers. And it's not about loyalties, historic loyalties. It's about the dangers in the future. It's all very well sitting comfortably in your houses in the South, going yay, yay, and cheering from your comfortable armchairs as armchair politicians. But you have to put your emotions and hearts for people stuck, and a lot of them are our students from South Africa. You have to put your logical hats on and say, this is not about loyalty. This is about being right and just. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bergman.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. And greetings to honorable members, the leadership that is here from the department. I think, Chair, you have categorically stated very clear that the department has played a very crucial role in this regard, and we need to applaud the department, acting DG, and your collective for the work that we have done so far, because we are all concerned about what is happening. Because our concern is about the results and the impact of what the armed conflict will bring about in human suffering, the destruction of infrastructure, and as well as the devastating effect on the economy. And not only in Ukraine, but in the whole world. So it will have a negative impact, Honorable Chair and colleagues. It will have been a negative financial impact in the market and all that. So it's our view that we must find a common understanding so that at the end of the day, we call for a mediation and engagement to end a war that is continuously unfolding between Russia and Ukraine. Now, this matter, Chair, does not need us to grandstand. Because if we start grandstanding, we are not going to solve the problem. We are not going to help the department in solving the problem. We need to be sober when we deal with this matter, because if we are not sober, we'll create more problems for us as South Africa. So for us to be able not to create further problems is that we must continue preaching peace, disarmament, and the environmentally sustainable development in line with the Freedom Charter, Chair, which stated very clear that at all times there shall be peace and friendship. So these are the issues that I think, as part of the package to the leadership of the department, to take care of without taking sides, of course, and make sure that at the end of the day, we find a common solution, and we pray that both
Russia and Ukraine find a common solution to end war. And again, we need to applaud the department for their intervention, especially to South Africans that are in those areas that are in a crisis now. They must continue doing that so that so our South Africans, citizens who are there, can be safe at all times. But at most, I think we are coming okay. And those that are representing us, they are still there for now, representing us very well, and we appreciate that. So the department and those that are representing us, they must continue doing the good job, make sure that they represent us very well, so that at the end of the day, all of us, we can be saying, we can speak in one voice. And I think we must call upon all parties to devote increased effort to diplomacy and to find a solution that will help this escalate the tension. And further than that, Chair, it's important that the tensions that are there, all of us, all those that are involved, sit down as today, as per the report that we have received now, that there are discussions taking place. And we only hope that those discussions will bear fruit so that at the end of the day, we are able to rescue and make sure that everybody is safe. Now, I said earlier on, we can't understand about this matter, and we can't bring politics. I hear Honorable Bergman speaking about that, that probably the department reasons and all that. I don't agree with that assertion of Honorable Bergman, because as things stand now, department, well done, we've done very well, we've contributed very well, and we really appreciate that. Chairperson, thank you very much. That was my little contribution on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Muela. Honorable Nwola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think it is important for us to note that there is completely nothing wrong when Russia protects its own borders against any form of invasion. But the basic principle to such is it should not escalate to an extent of innocent lives, the citizens being affected. And it should never escalate to an extent of property being destructed. But equally, Chair, I think it is important that we Chair, can you pass me your company?
Okay, attend to parental responsibilities, Honorable Nwala. We'll come back to you. I'm happy you decided to prioritize the child, because he or she needs your attention as a father. Thanks. Honorable Nwala. Honorable Chetty.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. At the outset, let me just endorse what my fellow colleague, Honorable Bergman, had to say. And I think, Chairperson, it's important that we do not tell no lies and claim.
Okay, we have lost Honorable Chetty. Honorable Nkosi?
Chair, I'm here.
I check and you. Sorry about that.
Yeah, proceed, Honorable Chetty.
Yeah, so Chair, like I'm saying, we were formed wanting. We all were well aware about the imminent attack by Russia on the Ukraine. But we chose to rather ignore the reality and therefore led to backlash. Chair, other countries weeks ahead, start with planning evacuation strategies for their citizens in the Ukraine. Right up until now, Chair, as we speak, we've got South African students who are on the border and having to have to make in which South Africa has delayed in acting in this manner. The other issue, Chairperson, and again, we must be very clear. I'm surprised that when you started this, you did not opt to give the committee a clear indication as to what was the situation surrounding this, firstly, by the DFO, and then in contradiction to what's coming from the president's office. I believe, Chairperson, is responsible, and in fact, it's your responsibility as a chair to take us as a committee into the confidence as to what has happened there. Why is it that the flip-flop? Why is it that there are contradictory messages coming from the department and now what's coming from the presidency? The important thing here, Chairperson, is that we are one country. The issue that's happening in Russia and in the Ukraine, we should be sending out one message, one solid message exactly stating where we stand and what our position is as South Africa, which should be on the right side of what's happening, because history will judge us. Furthermore, Chairperson, I am surprised again that no one has mentioned or alluded to the fact that the Minister of Defense was busy clinking champagne glasses with the Russian entourage while President Putin was busy sending his armed forces and bombing the Ukraine. This has now made international news and it has sullied or soured South Africa's image on the international arena, where some have even gone as far as saying that we seem to have been celebrating together with Russia while the innocent lives of Ukraine's residents, citizens and foreigners were being taken. Chair, there is no time for us to be sitting on the fence. We need to be clear. We need to send a message and know where we all stand. But right now, South Africa's indecisiveness is not doing us any favors. But here, as I conclude, I hope that in your summation, you will...
So what will you, Honorable Chairman, what would you suggest will be our message? If for instance, I go and say to... as the chair to both the president and the minister that we are sitting on a fence and we must send a message. What should be that message?
Chair, the message should be that we are in support of the people of Ukraine. More importantly, Chairperson, if we are going to make a statement, like I said to you, as a country, we need to be seen to be on the right side of this because history is going to judge us. The flip-flopping does not help us as a country. And Chair, I am sure the fact that you head this department, you are well aware that the two statements are contradicting that come from the department as well as the presidency. So there's no such question as to whether there is any indecisiveness. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chetty. Honorable members, just briefly, I had a discussion with the minister is in Geneva. And we were discussing, among other things, the situation between Ukraine and Russia. Among other things, we looked at the statement issued by the department, and the minister briefed me about that particular statement, and we agreed that the broad thrust of the statement is consistent with
South Africa's official stance in as far as peacekeeping all over the world is concerned, that we do not support any side, we do not take sides, neither do we point fingers, and that the matter of any misunderstanding that may have arisen based on some wording that was used in the statement is a matter that belongs to the department and the president, and the assurance we got is that as soon as that has been clarified, we will be accordingly briefed as the portfolio committee. But that statement of the department is consistent, when you look at it closely, it's consistent with the stance that South Africa has always taken, that parties must come together, states must come together, we must use multilateral bodies that are there to engage, and we must make sure that there is peace in the end. You may have also seen the interview of the chairperson, where the chairperson, in addition to the statement of the department which we supported and also supported the statement issued by the presidency, the chair of the committee did indicate that in addition to the efforts that are being undertaken, it will be important for us at some point to be briefed as to whether at a bilateral level and president-to-president level, there are discussions taking place between Ukraine and South Africa. And we are happy that part of the briefing we got today is what we had requested through the chairperson from the minister, that we must use our platforms, which are there in the United Nations, to make sure that we deliver the message as earlier on espoused by Mr. Zaire from the US. So I just thought I need to clarify that. And as far as I'm concerned, that matter is resolved between, it rests there between the presidency and the minister who is currently in Geneva. So that's how we have dealt with this particular matter. The next speaker is Honorable Mpansa.
It was myself, Chair.
Oh, sorry, my sister. I don't know, on the screen here, you're a little bit down. So I was looking at the script. I'm very sorry, I apologize.
Honorable Mpansa. It's fine. Thank you very much, Chair. And I want to concur with Honorable Chetty to say that, the lack of sense of emergency when such issues come in the globe with regards to the African continent is very alarming, because we saw a similar stance with when the pandemic hit. Africans were stranded all over the globe, and currently now again, there has been early warnings that you could have been predicted that this where we are today is where we will be. And I think South Africa did not act in a speedily manner. South Africa delayed to communicate with its people, and it's very sad that now, because Ukraine is prioritizing its citizens, the Africans, we seem to cry racism and all these things. But it all goes back to Africans having to protect their citizens and prioritizing their citizens wherever they are, and always making sure that any African is always protected and is always comfortable that their government will look after them in any state. But we are always the ones to be late bloomers and late actors. We are very reactionary, actually. And to date, Chairperson, we don't know what is the stance of the African Union with this regard, because I'll make an example. NATO is no different in Europe as the US AFRICOM in the African continent, wanting to establish bases in the whole of the African continent. So the African Union should have a stance on what is happening, because a lot of people now are becoming very emotional with regards to the reaction, but they are not proactive in finding why is this action coming? Why is Russia reacting as it is? Because, you know, as Africans, we always and should always look at it in a way that why are we allowing the United States to continue establishing military bases in our African continent? If we are allowing it as Africans, then other countries in Europe will not allow a similar body to do the same. So I strongly believe that the leaders in the African Union should have by now met and should have a solid stance on what is our position as the African continent, because, you know, our alliances and our allegiances to the French, to the English, to the colonizers, Chairperson, is the one that is compromising the African continent, because we are never united on what is best for the African continent, but we are always looking at what is the G7 doing? What is the BRICS doing? What is this doing? You know, as an African continent, we need a single voice, and we should be recognized as a single body, as an African continent. Chairperson, there are people in there are South Africans in Ukraine that are currently struggling with their documents. They've been waiting for documents from Home Affairs, and honestly, this issue has now been completely pushed to international relations. However, Home Affairs of South Africa is very quiet. They are very silent. They are not giving hope to South Africans. This goes back to me saying that, you know, the African continent or South Africa, we are not ready. Like, we are just not ready to serve our people, because Africans are constantly finding themselves as hobos. They are constantly finding themselves as the weaker child in the globe. We don't feel prioritized or as a continent that can bring hope to our people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, House Kempi. Honorable Nkosi.
Honorable Mpan. I think there are several issues that we need to put on the radar for the discussion. I would say that, Chair, one, we understand that international relations and conduct is largely influenced by what happens at the global level.
Honorable Nkosi, if you can come closer to your computer mic, your audibility is very low.
Am I audible now?
You are now. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. I'm saying that international relations is impacted on by what happens at the global level, but more so by geopolitics at all times, and the situation happens vice versa. And to craft a proper response, it is always important to understand the regional or geopolitical dynamics that inform action or inaction on the part of states. So my view, Chair, in that regard is that perhaps we should take a similar approach that we did with the situation in Libya and now in Tunisia, and allow the department to give us a detailed briefing on the historical perspective, and including what is currently happening in the geospace of that region, particularly involving
in this case, the Ukraine and Russia. But there's been all other issues that involve the disintegration of the former Soviet relationship and Union, but and its relationship with its former states that have evolved since 1990. And if you don't understand that context, it becomes difficult to make an informed input. And therefore, it's important that the department concretely briefs us on such. The second point that relates to the expatriation of South African citizens. Irrespective of whether we're late or reactive, the department has to be commended on what it is doing currently to ensure that South Africans are moved out of that situation to avoid becoming part of the escalation in conflict. And we should, as a country, be concentrating on how best to move people and exploit each and every avenue that and every subject to do that. The third point, Chair, is that I think the as a country, we need to fall behind the approach taken by the executive through the president and DECO, particularly because at that level, it represents, for me, an approach that a country like ours should take in view of our sovereignty, et cetera, et cetera. But it is also a stance taken that is not extremist, is not minimalist, it's not extremely overt towards any other side involved in conflict, but acts in the interest of South Africa, the continent, and the world. That is why, as we act, while we act individually sometimes, but it is best to act within the multilateral fora in which we participate equally as members to make inputs. If you listen to what Ambassador Lache was saying about what is happening at the United Nations now, is that we risk other matters that are very urgent and important, including conflicts in our continent and elsewhere, to be sidelined if we take partisan stance as we are invited to by others here. I also note that this is an emotive issue that divides all of us. We have subjective views as political parties, as individuals, as think tanks, et cetera, but in the final end, a country has to take a particular stance, and a stance that unites all of us. And I think in this regard, what unites all of us is what the DECO and the presidency have said we should do, to call for peace, to call for negotiations, the initiation of which has been done, to call for multilateral institutions to prioritize the peaceful resolutions of all conflicts in the world, including this. And if you may just go back in history, the experience of Iraq, occupation, the experience of Afghanistan, whatever happened in Libya, says a lot about taking partisan stances in matters that, or wherein you are not informed by, particularly the geopolitical, strategic, military, economic, and other considerations that inform people and how they relate to each other. So, Chair, that is my input. That we congratulate. This is a live issue that we continue to support what DECO does in its effort to play an active role in securing our interests by ensuring that our people are properly expatriated back home, but also work with other countries to bring about a peaceful resolution of the situation. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Nkosi. Honorable Nwala, are you back? Okay, you still attending to the child. Honorable Mbanza.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also in a similar situation with Nwala.
Yeah.
But anyway, let me quickly, I'm not going to be long, Chair.
I want to echo what my colleagues have said, particularly Muela and Nkosi, in congratulating the department. Because, Chair, we must understand that this is not a situation that anyone anticipated. So, yes, we can criticize, but we must also give credit where credit is due. So under the circumstances, I think the department has done very well, and there's still room for improvement. It's a war situation, and anyone cannot predict what will happen in a situation like that. Yes, we can anticipate and plan, but a war is a war, if we all understand what the war is. Chair, the other issue, I just want to thank you for bringing this item, even if it was not part of the agenda, because it's a current issue. We could not, as a committee, could not be getting a briefing and also discussing the matter of this importance as far as what is happening in Ukraine in terms of the tensions that are prevailing there between Ukraine and Russia. So I really wanted to say thank you very much. Thank the department for availing itself, all the ambassadors, the acting DG. But lastly, because I'm covered by all my colleagues, also on the issue of the treatment of Africans there, I think we should condemn that with all condemnation that it deserves. But as Honorable Nsane was saying, of course, it's understandable. In a situation of a war, people will prioritize their own people. So I think the department has also done very much and other South African citizens around the world to assist our students and other South Africans and other African people who are there of the war. Lastly, Chair, the issue that was raised on the issue of the department playing politics and all those things, Chair, to me that remains an allegation, and I think it's a matter that we should not dwell on it as much, because the same what goes for the geese goes also by, they also say it goes for, I don't know for what, for the geese or the goose. You can't throw stones to other people's house when you are also living in a glass house. Because, Chair, that why I'm raising that, we should not also play politics here. Because what I'm seeing is that politics is being played here in this portfolio committee. And the ones who are saying the department is playing politics are the ones who are playing politics in this portfolio committee. And I think we must avoid playing politics anywhere, whether in the department and in this portfolio committee, and support the initiatives that everyone is making throughout the world. And I think we have clarified the matter of statements. There is no contradictions. The thrust of those statements are very clear. Everyone is saying let peace prevail, let all work for peace. We are on the side of the peace, of peace, not of Russia, not of Ukraine, but on the side of peace. And also let's allow diplomatic engagements and all the institutions that are responsible for dealing with this matter in our continent, in the world, to deal with the matter on our behalf. And we are represented by the department and the ministry, led by the minister and the president of the country. So let's hold it in that way. And then on individual capacity, as different members of the portfolio committee are also doing to assist the situation, let's encourage that. Yeah, but let us not play politics when we are dealing with this thing. We're dealing with a very serious issue that affects the lives of the people and the innocent people for that matter. So, and let's assist the situation, all of us. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mpanza. Honorable Mola, I hope you will be covered by those who have now spoken.
Yeah, I'm covered, Chair. I'm covered, thanks.
You're covered. And thanks for attending to the child. This is it's very important. We want the use of that child in the future with regard to how we relate as a village globally and how South Africa plays its role there. Honorable members, I think we're giving
It's a new hand, Chair. You haven't recognized it.
No, but you have spoken.
Yeah, you see, Chair, yes, I have spoken, but there seems to be some confusion again. So I just want to rectify something so we're all on the same page. Insofar as we are concerned, we have been supportive of the statement by Durkle. There is a contradiction between both those statements.
No, yeah.
And I know that members are saying...
No.
But Chair, allow me to finish because I'm saying if we're going to miss...
No. Honorable Chetty, you are repeating yourself. I've heard you very clearly.
Okay,
you are
no
going
problem.
Back. You are, being, no we are going, you are going back to what, in your own view, is a contradiction between the statement issued by the presidency and the ministry. And I've responded to that matter and how I've discussed it with the minister.
I'll withdraw that, Chair. But just to let you know, when you ask me what will we do, so let me just indulge. Allow me that indulgence. Chair, what
no,
I
No, you did. Like, you did tell me what is.
So you know what to do.
Don't take chances. I'm listening very carefully to what you're saying.
Sure, Chair.
Right?
Sure, Chair.
You said South Africa should not be sitting on the fence on the matter of Russia and Ukraine, right? You said so.
Sure.
And I asked you a specific question. If I was to speak to both the president and the minister, what must we say is the position that the South African government must take so that they are not be seen to be sitting on the fence? And you gave your opinion.
Sure.
We've had your opinion.
Unless okay,
you
thank you, Chair.
That, if you suspect that we did not hear you, we've had you clearly.
I'm glad, Chair.
I think
yes,
this
is fine. But remember, this is a meeting, so it doesn't mean that when one individual has tabled an opinion through some osmotic process, then the opinion becomes the decision of the meeting. So we are going to wrap up the meeting now and say what is the way forward.
Sure, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Ambassador, Acting DG. Before we come to the way forward, you do want to amplify something in the course of the discussions. I'm sure there may be some amplification that you want to do.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We have indeed taken note of the inputs from the Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. We want to assure the committee that we're doing everything in our power to ensure that we help the South Africans, including those who are trapped in the border between Russia and Ukraine. We've also, Honorable Chair, engaged Home Affairs. There were citizens who needed visas, and Home Affairs has come to party. I've been personally talking with the DG of Home Affairs throughout the weekend, and you know, I've also just seen his missed call. We are also, Honorable Chair, talking to our security forces. We've had meetings with the Defence Force, the Defence Intelligence. We have meetings with our farmers, the SSA, and the Honourable Chair. I would like to inform the committee that we have activated the command centre that usually takes over when there's disasters or, you know, challenges of this nature. We will send all the details through the office of the secretary of this committee,
And we have officials who are on duty throughout. We have telephones. And as we were also having these discussions, Honorable Chair, I want to confirm that I've also been talking to Haile and the team from the UK and around Europe. They have been of assistance. So we will resolve the issue of the students who are trapped on the borders of Russia, whether today or early tomorrow. And it's not only South Africans, they are also Botswana nationals. I will be calling the chief of protocol of Botswana and the ambassador here, because we must get permission from them to assist. And we've also been helping other African countries as well. We had also received requests from Namibia and so forth. I must say, Honorable Chair, we are seized with this challenge, and we want to assure the committee and Honorable Chair that the department will do all in its power to ensure that South Africans are evacuated to a safer place. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Acting DG. Honorable members, it's now 16 minutes past one, so we are running out of time for the sitting that is taking place at 2 o'clock. We want to thank the department for the earlier presentation in as far as the situation in Tunisia is concerned. And we also want to thank the ambassador for availing himself at a short notice to make a presentation together with the department to the portfolio committee. We want to thank the department through you, Acting Director General Losi, Ambassador, for ensuring that you marshal all your forces relevant for clarity to the portfolio committee in as far as the matters of Ukraine and Russia conflict are concerned. We think that this was very enlightening. Concretely, the facts, we have now received them from the department, and we applaud you for taking initiatives. There will always be perceptions as to whether you are on time or you are not on time, you are proactive or not proactive in as far as those matters are concerned. But in the end, we are all happy that an initiative has been undertaken to assist South Africans of various kinds so that they can safely depart from Ukraine to other destinations and finally back to their motherland, South Africa. There's a broad agreement in the portfolio committee that a message must be sent to the AU to make sure that the AU's voice is raised in as far as calling for peace, negotiations, engagement between Ukraine and Russia is concerned, and that in the same context, there must be unity of purpose expressed through the African Union. There's also a broad agreement within the portfolio committee that we must commend the department for the work that has been done through the ambassadors of South Africa based at different locations in that particular region. I will not mention them. To make sure that South Africa plays its role in not only ensuring the safety of South Africans, but the safety of Africans and other nations. In the same vein, the portfolio committee agrees that there will have to be some investigation later when the dust has settled, the matter relating to allegations of racial profiling at some of the borders between Ukraine and other countries. In this instance, it's Africans in general and South Africans in particular and other nationalities that are going through the borders there. We hope that at the right time, that matter will be given attention. South Africa, through the presidency and DERCO, we are also saying they are correct in using negotiations as a platform through the bilateral platforms and the multilateral platforms that are there to make sure that stability and peace is achieved between Russia and the Ukraine. We are also saying that though there might be state there must be some sentiment expressed to the effect that the department might have been late in ensuring that we help South Africans to exit Ukraine. As I said earlier, we applaud the action being taken by the department and you working with other ambassadors of other African countries like Nigeria, Ghana, and other countries that are involved in the situation there. We hope that everybody ultimately will be saved and nobody will be harmed in that situation. We are happy that our ambassadors have been safely evacuated from the situation in Ukraine, and they continue, whether they are in transit, whether they are already evacuated. We want to applaud them for their relentless commitment to continue to do their work and updating the department, the country through the media, and everybody else, including the portfolio committee, on how they are handling that situation. That's very patriotic, and we are hoisting the flag of the South African nation. We applaud you for that. At an appropriate time, as I've said, we'll return to the methods of investigations that may be done. And we are happy that this matter has been raised in the United Nations meetings that are taking place relating to allegations of racial profiling. It is the hope of the portfolio committee that initiatives that are being undertaken, which have resulted in some optimistic discussions taking place between Russia and Ukraine. We are happy that those initiatives have been taken, and we applaud those who are providing leadership in that regard. And we look forward to those discussions taking place between Russia and Ukraine, bearing some fruits and bringing the conflict ultimately to an end. It is the view of the portfolio committee that a way forward, which will not take into account all historical contexts between Russia and Ukraine, that way forward will be bound to cause problems in future, because the way forward that is based on concretely what happened in the past, our history can then inform our current situation and the future that we seek to achieve. In that regard, we are agreeing with a proposal made that at some point the department will have to come to the portfolio committee and give us, as you did with Libya and Tunisia today, give us a historical account of the situation between Russia and the Ukraine. In the same vein, we are calling upon the department to continue to brief the portfolio committee, but also to continue to brief South Africans on the unfolding situation. I'll make an example. It will be better if on a continuous basis, South Africans know at what regular times of the day will there be a briefing from the department on the situation between Ukraine and Russia, particularly as it relates to South Africans who are based in that part of the world. Like we did during the height of COVID, South Africans were aware on at what time are we going to get the briefing from the executive relating to the developments around this particular matter. So we are suggesting that you may want to consider that proposal, because predictability and certainty will assist a lot, and people will get out of the panic mode if they continue to receive information. We are also saying that South Africa is correct in continuing to call for the toning down in as far as other bodies, like whether they are in the United Nations or whether it's in NATO countries. We all need to tone down so that in the end we can be able to hear one another, we can engage rationally with each other. And we hope that today in the assembly, when the final determination is made, it will be a determination that will bring the world together rather than further polarizing the world. It's our hope that we will achieve that today. If we don't achieve that today, it is the hope of the portfolio committee that it will not stop engagement. We must continue to discuss until a solution is found regarding this particular matter. The portfolio committee is calling upon the entire world, particularly bodies like United Nations and so on, to make sure that yes, we must continue to attend to the situation in Ukraine and Russia, but that must not detract us from continuing to implement all other agreed way forwards from those particular bodies in as far as other conflicts that are ensuing in the world is concerned. In the end, the portfolio committee says it is satisfied with the discussions that are taking place between the presidency and DERCO relating to some confusion that may have arisen. We are happy that that confusion has been settled, arising from the statements that were made. In particular, it is the part of the statement that related to DERCO having said that Russia should withdraw its forces from Ukraine. We are very happy that leadership has been provided in that regard, and the matter is now settled between the DERCO and the presidency. So what we'll focus on now is making sure that peace is brought about through negotiations and engagements between Russia and Ukraine. Honorable members, there are other household matters that we need to deal with, but before I do that, once more, Honorable Ambassador Acting DG, we want to thank you for your team and bringing them together under emergency situations, and the ones that had to wake up in the US to join this briefing session to the portfolio committee. For me, that represents what I characterize as a revocracy. That is a bureaucracy that understands the intertwinedness between the needs of the revolution and for us as bureaucrats to implement what the people are expecting of us. So we thank you for that, for the presentations, and continue to do that particular work. Marshal all your forces throughout the rest of the world to make sure that this situation between Ukraine and Russia, petrol prices getting out of that happening there, combined between Ukraine and Russia, Africa imports more than $6 billion US dollars of sunflower and wheat. So we cannot afford, I'm just giving one example, we cannot afford a prolonged situation that is unfolding in that part of the world, because it has got a ripple effect throughout the globe. So thank you very much. I give our regards to the minister for the work she's doing in Geneva and the rest of the executive collective that is doing the work elsewhere. The household matters, honorable members, that we need to deal with are the 4 to 5 sets of minutes that have been sent to all of us. So we are at a stage where we must get movers for adoption of those minutes.
Chair, can we leave the platform?
Yes, yes, the rest of the other colleagues can leave. That's what I was saying.
Thank you.
Suggest for adoption of minutes, honorable members. Are we now in a stage of sleepism?
Hello, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Mwela.
I don't know which procedure do you suggest we should do in adopting those minutes. Should we go minutes by minutes as per the dates, or should we just adopt them as the whole?
Yes, I will suggest that because we got the minutes, all of them on time, and we went through them, somebody can there suggest that we adopt the minutes as a true reflection of what ensued in those past meetings on the dates that are indicated.
In that case, Chair, if you may allow me.
Yeah.
I propose that we adopt the minutes as circulated by the Secretariat. That's my proposal, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any seconda?
I second, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mbanza, for seconding whilst at the same time attending to the child. Honorable members, the minutes are now adopted. The other household matter that we need to deal with relates to our retreat and the trip to Namibia and the oversight trip to Pretoria. I will now give over to Lubabalo. If you can just simply, quickly, just indicate the highlights to Wenela Uzbineo on those particular matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think yesterday, Chair, I circulated a draft program of activities for the portfolio committee for March and April, Chair. In March, Chair, we have two activities, Chair, which are scheduled. The first one is an oversight visit to DECO on the 25th and 26th of March. That activity has been approved, Chairperson, and I believe that some logistics arrangements which have been able to fly have been sent to members. Also, Chair, just to mention that some members are yet to confirm their departing destinations, Chairperson. And then the second event, Chair, is happening on the, which is the oversight visit to Namibia, is scheduled for the 26th of March to overlap to April, returning on the 2nd of April, Chair. And that one is yet to be approved. And then the last event in April, which is on the 19th to the 21st of April, we are scheduled to attend to a strategic planning session. The venue identified is OR Tambo Airport. That one also, Chair, is not yet approved. So that is where we are, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I sent a message to Honorable Frawley regarding a bit of a misunderstanding with regard to the interpretation of a study tour and an oversight from a perspective of international relations, because Honorable Frolic's belief is that our trip to Namibia is a study tour, when we know that our trip to Namibia is an oversight. It's also based on the outcomes of the Auditor General's report that we have to do, and if we don't do that as part of oversight, we will be sleeping on duty. So we await a response from Honorable Frolic with regard to that particular matter. So where matter stands now, there is a possibility that that trip might not occur to Namibia. Just in case it doesn't happen because of ensuing discussions to and fro between our office and Honorable Frolic's office, just know in advance that it will be because of a difference in understanding on the matter relating to a study tour and an oversight. The committee was unambiguous with regard to going to these countries to embark on an oversight, like we are going to be going to Europe in June on an oversight and not a study tour. So based on developments there, we will accordingly bring the members of the portfolio committee to be on par as to whether we are going or we are not going. I want to thank you, honorable members, for the participation. As usual, it was robust, it was informative in the character of robust oversight that we need to play as a portfolio committee. Enjoy your sitting this afternoon and everything else going forward. Hambani kahle, re a leboga, siyabonga, baya danki, moedwo.
Good night, Chair. Good night, bye.
Recording stopped.